Blog Talk Radio.
It is Sunday, May 13th, 2018, and this is Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchLivecast.com. I'm Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks. Glad to have you with us here on this Mother's Day weekend, and a happy and healthy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there in our listenership. And we got a lot to talk about tonight, a lot going on a Sunday as it pertains to the All In show, which is coming up September 1st, and to help me break down all things big event in professional wrestling, it is PWTorch.com contributor Zach Haydorn. Zach, are you with us?
I am here, Greg. Thank you very much for having me.
And it's good to be with you again, Zach. Want to start off by talking about All In. Tickets went on sale 4 o'clock this afternoon, sold out in 30 minutes. I think even the most optimistic analyst who's been following the progress of this show and following the wrestling business was probably surprised at how quickly that show sold out. The immediate thought by folks on Twitter as I was reading through this afternoon was that perhaps ticket brokers bought up large chunks of tickets in order to sell them on the secondary market. We see that happen with big shows, WrestleMania, the Royal Rumble, SummerSlam, a lot of big WWE events. But the longer time passes, the less we see that as a real distinct possibility. I'm sure that there are some that will open up on the secondary market, but that doesn't seem to be the majority of purchasers for this all-in event. So, Zach, first question to you. How surprised are you that All In sold out so quickly?
I'm very surprised that it sold out as quickly as it did. Honestly, to me, looking at the situation and looking at the show and the talent on the show and the fact that they hadn't even announced any matches on the show yet before the on sale. So to me, going into the on sale today at 3 o'clock for Eastern, if they sold 4,000, 5,000 tickets, I would have taken that as a significant win on the part of people putting on this show because there just hasn't been that much announced for it yet. Nobody really knows what is going to take place come September 1st. So that being said, having it be sold out in 30 minutes and all 10,000 seats gone, I think it's just a tremendous testament to what Cody and the Young Bucks and the Bullet Club is doing right now. Clearly their brand resonates, and clearly it hits, it makes a deeper impact in the world of pro wrestling than just the diehard fans. I mean, this type of sellout doesn't happen otherwise. And I'm from Chicago, Greg, and I can tell you the marketing in market here was slim to none in terms of like radio, television, even like any sort of over the top streaming ads. There wasn't any outdoor billboards. There was a little bit of social media ads here and there, but all in all, this is a show that kind of traveled and got to this point on the backs of those brands and of those wrestlers. So I'm surprised, but I'm happy for them because I think they hit a home run and they deserve a ton of credit.
And I think over the next few weeks and months, you're going to see people take a little bit of a step back here and look at what this means for the business. You're seeing a lot of people celebrating, with good reason, this event and the fact that it sold out so quickly. You know, Cody Rhodes, the Young Bucks, certainly treading on the positivity that surrounds them by fans in the wrestling business. Certainly trading on that in order to sell tickets. And I think you mentioned goodwill, Zach. These guys have such goodwill built up that as you mentioned, you know, this show is selling out 10,000 tickets without a lineup, basically. They
right.
listed a lot of wrestlers who will be participating, but they haven't really named any matches yet. And I think that adds to how incredible this situation really is. You know, they're not associating with any particular company. You know, this isn't you know, Young Bucks and Cody Rhodes on the back of ROH doing this. This isn't anything like that. I mean, this is certainly a unique situation in that they are on their own. They're not affiliated. They're not doing this in affiliation with any wrestling company. So it is amazing what they've done.
Yeah, it really is. And to piggyback off of that, they also don't have, you know, I think a lot of people going into the show and going into the on sale figured that they'd get some kind of big name that isn't on the market right now. A while back, Daniel Bryan was floated around. I know being from Chicago, CM Punk's name was tossed around. And I know CM Punk's doing an appearance, but they haven't used those guys and, you know, top stars in the business, WWE wise, to sell these tickets. They really have done it on their own, in full for the most part. And that, to me, in selling 10,000 tickets today, that is the most shocking thing. If you put Daniel Bryan out there and say, hey, he's going to wrestle and it's going to be the first time since he's cleared, okay, then I think I can rationalize in my head why 10,000 makes sense. But to not have that and just have it on the shoulders of those guys, it's really, really impressive.
Zach, I want to ask you about the word success, because that's been thrown out quite a bit in the last few hours, even dating back earlier today when they had the press conference in Chicago. As an outsider looking in on this and taking into account, you know, what this means for the wrestling business as a whole, what will define success for this show? Is it, you know, being able to run a second show and draw just as well? Is it going to be, you know, if they get positive buzz coming out of this? Or is this show, before it's even taken place, already a success based on the fact that it sold out a 10,000-seat arena with no backing from any major professional wrestling company?
Yeah, well, first of all, I think success, it changes a little bit based on the scope and situation of what's going on. Out of the gate here, look, the goal was to sell 10,000 tickets for an independent pro wrestling show. And they did that. So in that regard, out of the gate, sitting here today at 7 o'clock Central Time, to me, the show is a success. But since they knocked that out of the park so easily, you know, expectations, I think, are a bit higher now too. And they're going to have to succeed at meeting those as well. And to me, that means a very, very good product September 1st. It means a heck of a four-day weekend where everything is smoothly operated, no hiccups, just like a real professional atmosphere. And coming out of the show, obviously, yes, it needs to live up to the hype and live up to why people wanted to actually come and see the show and why the Bucks and Cody felt like they could put it on to begin with. But out of the show, I think success is being able to look back and say, okay, what worked here? Why did it work? And can we turn up the volume on the next show to really tap into that? 10,000 tickets on the first day here and in the first 30 minutes tells me that there is a market for the type of pro wrestling that Cody, the Bucks, and the Bullet Club are putting out right now. And I think a big success point coming out of this show will be how can they leverage the success that they've already had with this all-in deal and where they can take it further. That probably, in my mind, that means a second show. That means, you know, storylines that will actually evolve and take place on their programs. But it's tough to say because it's so new and so fresh, but you got to think if you're them right now with all the success they had today, that they're thinking like, okay, how do we grow this thing even bigger? So I look at the baby steps. I look at the steps from here on out. Okay. Is it a professional atmosphere that weekend? Is the show good? Does that show itself live up to expectations? And can they put logical, and attainable steps in place after the show to continue evolving their brand to get bigger and bigger and bigger?
This might be an unfair question because it is so early in the process, Do you see this becoming the new normal in professional wrestling, specifically on the independent scene? Are we going to see big name independent wrestlers try to run their own shows and get their friends and sell and trade on their popularity? You know, a lot of people are saying this is a new era in which the wrestlers are gaining a lot and a bigger piece of the pie than they've had before, whereas they've always been seen, you know, with no unions in professional wrestling, they've always been seen as worker bees in the professional wrestling industry. This gives some power back to the wrestlers. Do you see this as becoming something that others are going to try? Like, this is just the first name that pops into my mind, but see Jack Swagger, you know, he's out there, he's got the WWE pedigree, he's got the name and value. Is this something, you know, certainly not in the scope of All In where they're selling out a 10,000 seat arena, but you know, if Swagger wants to make more than he might be making an independent deal, wrestling for another company, you know, he may see an opportunity where, you know, he can keep more of the gate and he can keep more of, you know, whatever else goes into it. Is this going to be a little more of the new normal, do you think, going forward?
I don't think so. And the reason I say that is just because being able to do something like this, it takes a vision, it takes dedication, it takes a lot of hard work, and it also takes money. You know, it takes a significant bankroll and a willingness to take a big risk to put a show on like this. So I don't think anybody's gonna fall into something like this until All In on September 1st is over. That's for sure. But I think all the stars aligned properly for a show like this to happen. You have the Young Bucks, who are absolutely on fire outside of just Ring of Honor and New Japan, but they've built a viable brand for themselves outside of WWE, and virtually no independent wrestlers have done it like they have. Same thing with Cody, and same thing to an extent with Kenny Omega as well. Even though he's a guy that's committed more to New Japan than anything else, but you have all that stuff working together and kind of colliding at the same time. The Young Bucks being as over as they are, Cody leaving WWE and just reinventing himself and clicking on all cylinders with exactly what he wanted to do with his post WWE career. And I think timing is everything on a lot of this stuff, and those stars aligned perfectly. And you have a guy like Cody who is interested and willing to live in the business of pro wrestling and not just work as a performer in the ring. You know, he does so much more than that. So do the Young Bucks, and so do other members of the Bullet Club. So I don't want to say that this is a one-time thing, because I certainly think it opens doors for anybody and any wrestler to do a lot more, given the fact that this market is here. But I don't want to undercut what the Bucks and what Cody has done with this show, because it's never been done before, and they did it, and I'm not sure it's that easily replicated.
A couple of other big announcements today relating to All In. Rey Mysterio has been added to the show, and Cody will be challenging for the NWA title at All In. Those are a couple other All In notes from today. Zach, I hate to ask you this question, and I'm going to punch myself for having to ask it to you, but I feel like it's a good one to end on before we take our first break. CM Punk is going to be doing a signing at Pro Wrestling Tees store on August 31st in Chicago, the day before All In. Put a percentage on it. What's the percentage that CM Punk percent chance that CM Punk shows up at All In?
Oh, man, that is a tough question, but I will take a stab at it. I'm going to say that by show up, you mean just walk through the door and steps foot in the ring? Or does it mean like put a gear on and wrestle a match?
Be booked in some capacity. I don't think he would wrestle even if he's on the show, but he would appear on the show in front of the crowd in some way.
Okay, I'm going to say 65% chance that he ends up on the show in some way. It's in his backyard. I think they're promoting him here at the Pro Wrestling Tees signing. Like, I don't know. I just got it. It's a gut feeling. There's absolutely nothing viable to go off of in terms of me saying that. It's just kind of like a gut feeling that I have. I don't think he's going to be wrestling in a match, but I'm just going to go out on a limb, and I'm going to say 65%.
I was going the complete opposite
How
direction. I was thinking 5%.
5%?
You know,
no chance.
Yeah. I thought Cody was a little coy in you know, the answer that he gave, or Matt, I think it was Matt Jackson, actually.
Yeah, it was Matt.
That
yep.
Addressed the question at the press conference today, say kind of Punk's doing his own thing. I think if there were ever a situation where Punk got back into wrestling, I think this would probably be it, because it would be more fun for him. But I also think he's got that mentality that as long as his MMA and UFC dream is alive, I don't think he wants to get mixed up in pro wrestling. But certainly the autograph signing and the meet and greet and the timing of it is going to raise a lot of eyebrows. So I certainly understand why you're hedging your bets and giving what I think is a rather high percentage. But, man, it would be nice. I mean, you know, unadvertised, I think it would be one of those things where WWE doesn't do it enough, where they reward their viewers for tuning in and giving them something unexpected. I think that would be something that Cody and the Young Bucks would look to do at this show. I just don't know if the price is going to be right for Punk and all that goes into it. So,
Here's the other the thought about that too, is, you know, I the way I kind of look at it is like, I still think that even if you look at the roster of people that they have on that show and you try to, you know, fantasy book the matches and say, okay, this guy works here, this guy could face that guy, et cetera, et cetera. Part of me still thinks they're missing – I take that back. Going into the on sale, part of me felt that they were missing that kind of must-see attraction, whether it's a match or otherwise. So going into the on sale, I thought, okay, well, they have Punk in their back pocket if they need to. They're doing the signing, and, you know, 2 weeks down the road, they can either promote an appearance to drive ticket sales if ticket sales are weak, or they can keep it in their back pocket and unveil him as a surprise on that day. The timing of everything just it just raised a red flag for me. That's all. So I'm taking a leap of faith, but we'll see.
All right. Well, we will all find out on September 1st in Chicago at All In. Nothing yet as far as streaming, but it sounds like at the press conference they were open to it if something came up. 515-605-9345 is the number to call. We're going to take our first break and come back with your phone calls talking all the big events in pro wrestling. Stay tuned. You're listening to Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchLivecast.com.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at pwpodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Pritchard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts.
Earlier this week, I got a new shipment of Harry's razors, razor blades from Harry's to go with my shaving kit. And let me tell you, the great thing about ordering online from Harry's is they know exactly when you're due a new razor blade. And that's the great thing. You don't have to go out of your way. You don't have to order more. You don't have to go to the drugstore and get more razors. And they know when you sign up, you tell them how often you use it, and bam, they're at your door when you need them. Harry stands behind the quality of their blades, but they know that switching razors isn't an easy decision, so they created a trial offer. You can claim yours by going to harrys.com/harrysfounders. We're fed up with overpaying for expensive razors with unnecessary features. They knew a great shave comes down to great blades made with sharp, durable steel that lasts. That's why they bought a factory that's been making some of the highest quality blades in the world for over 95 years. By selling directly to you over the internet, Harry's can offer their blades at a price much lower than the leading brand, just $2 per blade compared to $4 or more from the competitors. There's also a quality guarantee. If you don't love your shave, let Harry's know within 30 days, and they'll give you a full refund. Get a $13 value trial set that comes with everything you need for a close, comfortable shave, including a weighted ergonomic handle. Also, you get a 5-blade razor with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel, and a travel blade cover. Listeners of Wrestling Night in America can redeem their trial set at harrys.com/PWTorch. Make sure you go to harrys.com/PWTorch to redeem your offer. Let them know I sent you to help support the show. Back here at Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchLiveCast.com, we thank you for joining us. We're going to get into phone calls. We'll also talk a little bit about Backlash from last weekend and preview Money in the Bank. Talk the big Raw and SmackDown news as well as they continue to provide qualifying matches for both the men's and women's Money in the Bank matches coming up in June. But we hit the phones with our first caller from the 516 area code. This looks like Frank, 516. Hello.
It looks correct, Greg. Hey, you there?
Yeah, I got you, Frank. How are you?
What's going on, Greg? What's going on, Zach? Good to talk to both of you guys tonight.
You too, Frank.
So I'm going to call an audible on my question since you guys brought up CM Punk. I can't help but speculate on the possibility someday, let's just say he does make it to this All-In event in September, is there any chance at all ever of him working for WWE again? I mean, I would think that the biggest obstacle is his relationship with Triple H. But is there a possibility at all that he makes his way back to WWE ever?
Sure. There's always a possibility. We know that Vince McMahon likes to bring back into the fold people who vow they'd never work for him again, things like that. And even in Punk's scathing interview on Colt Cabana's podcast a few years ago, I think he even, you know, left the door open. Of course, that was years ago now. We don't know where his mind's at. I mean, he doesn't really answer a lot of questions about wrestling these days, so we don't really know what he feels about it. Certainly the biggest obstacle at this point, not only his relationship with Triple H, but the lawsuit that is out with the WWE doctor, Chris Amon, and you know, the CM Punk Colt Cabana lawsuit that I believe it's rapidly approaching the date that is going to trial. It's either later this month or next month or something like that, I think I read. So that, to me, is the big obstacle right now. Certainly his focus is on MMA. You know, based on the first fight, I can't imagine this career lasting all that long. Who knows? He could surprise us at his next fight. But, yeah, there's always a possibility he comes back for a one-off. I don't think he's ever going to be full-time again or anything like that. Or, you know, maybe he gets a Lesnar deal. I think that's the best you could hope for if you're a CM Punk fan and want to see him back in professional wrestling. But I tend to think more of a one-off. And, you know, the other thing that we have to consider is if he does get the itch to come back to pro wrestling, it's not necessarily going to be in WWE. It could be these types of all-in events. It could be New Japan. It could be some local independent shows in Chicago. So, you know, certainly, one, he'd have to have his mind right to return to professional wrestling. And two, he'd have to make the decision to return not only back to professional wrestling, but to WWE. And those are two big hills to climb. Zach, what do you think? Will we ever see Punk in WWE again?
I agree with most of what you said, Greg. And I think, is there a possibility? Absolutely. Because you look at the history in WWE and all these guys who have been on the outs and who have swore they would never come back to the company. I mean, it's hard-pressed to find one that actually hasn't done so. I mean, Ultimate Warrior, Bruno, Hulk Hogan, I mean, they've all come back. So it'd kind of be a silly bet to say outright that there's absolutely no chance. But like Greg, like you mentioned, there's a lot of things standing in the way of that right now, mainly his UFC career and the fact that he's got some interest elsewhere. And he doesn't have a good relationship with Triple H. He doesn't have, I'm sure still, he doesn't have a very good taste in his mouth about the last days with him in that company. And with so many different outlets and avenues now to be a pro wrestler and to make good money, you know, I'm sure he'd like nothing more than to stick it to WWE somehow and go be a big draw elsewhere. That said, you know, still the WWE, they can pay him the most money. They have the biggest reach, and they're still the biggest wrestling company in the world today. And you know, money talks a lot of times too. So a possibility,
yeah.
But he's got a lot of options.
You know, WWE needs some serious competition, you know, because if they had some competition, I don't think we would be dealing with a Roman Reigns push for 4 years trying to get him over as a babyface. I mean, we saw when they had competition in the 90s, you know, they elevated Stone Cold, they elevated The Rock, they became, you know, the most popular guys, and they're arguably on the Mount Rushmore WWE. So let me – I'll use a second question on this. Let's just say, for argument's sake, Impact gets money down the line, or, you know, ROH for that matter. And let's say CM Punk decides to come back, and let's say maybe Daniel Bryan decides not to stay with WWE. Could that be the Hulk Hogan move of 1994 that gets everybody saying, wow, they signed Bryan, they signed Punk, I'm going to start watching that company? You know what I mean? Like, what you know, could that be the move that creates the competition for WWE to, you know, kind of shake things up a little bit?
Yeah, I think the difference is Hogan still had some mainstream appeal at that point, and that was a newsworthy move. Punk and Bryan, you know, they don't have that cachet amongst the mainstream. You know, Punk is going to be older by that point whenever he decides to move on from MMA. Certainly Daniel Bryan will have a lot of mileage on his body as well. So certainly from the name value point of view, I think there is a certain percentage of the fan base that will be intrigued and that would tune in. You know, the thing is, they'll tune in for Daniel Bryan and CM Punk, but that company that they go to has to make sure that the rest of their roster is sound enough and interesting enough and booked well enough to keep those people around who are tuning in to see Daniel Bryan and CM Punk. And not only that, but to pay to see those other wrestlers, you know, whether it's pay-per-view, whether it's live attendance or things of that nature. So, you know, I think even if a CM Punk or a Daniel Bryan were to go outside of WWE and wrestle, I don't think you would see Daniel Bryan sign an exclusive contract anywhere. I think he's the kind of guy who would want to sample a lot of different styles in a lot of different places, almost making up for lost time on the independent scene. And same with Punk. I don't think he's going to be a full-time guy there. So that's what you would really run into, unless you, you know, like you said, Impact comes into money. If they came into a lot of money and were able to throw millions of dollars at Daniel Bryan and say, we want you to be exclusive to us, you know, maybe that would be the difference. But at that point, you know, why not stay in WWE for that kind of money too? Zach, sure. can Punk and Bryan move the needle for another company, do you think?
I think they can initially. I think they can get eyes on the product out of the gate. So if somebody like Impact, you know, let's say they go under new ownership and they find money, like you said, and both guys sign there, I think initially they will draw tons of attention and eyes to the product that they're now working with. On the flip side, that product, though, overall, has to be different. It has to stand on its own. I don't think Bryan and Punk, like you said, Greg, have the cachet like a Hogan did in terms of mainstream star appeal to completely be the reason alone why somebody would watch Impact over Raw head-to-head. I think there has to be something that separates that new brand from the competition, and Bryan and Punk would certainly help that. And like I said, they'd help out of the gate for sure. But there still has to be those differences that make that product different than the status quo, like WWE, in my opinion.
Yeah. Frank, follow up or any other comments or questions you got for us?
Yeah, I'll follow up on that, and I'll throw you a quick question so you get some other people in. But you know, it's funny that you guys say that about, those guys go in there and then, you know, the product needs to stand on its own. That was, I think, the big thing with WCW. You know, Hogan went there, Macho Man went there, everybody went there, and it was great. And then the NWO and all that stuff. But then after that, they just didn't know how to develop the product. All you kept seeing was, you know, the old guys getting title runs, whatever, you know, not really trying to develop the younger stars, and then people got sick of the product. So I agree that, you know what I mean? Like, it would certainly help, and I agree that they're not, you know, the name, they don't have the name recognition that Hogan did, but yeah, I mean, hopefully another product, you know, could stand on its own 2 feet and develop something different than what WWE has to offer, you know. But anyway, I'll throw you guys a quick question. Just with Money in the Bank, I'm sure you're going to talk about that tonight. I know it's a little early to discuss winners and stuff like that. We still got to get more qualifying matches. But I don't know that I want to see Miz win this, because Miz has been on such a roll lately. I don't know if he's a favorite. I don't know if you guys are thinking he's a favorite or whatever. But, you know, he's wrestled such great matches. I would like to actually see Miz win the WWE title at some point, whether it be, you know, SummerSlam or, you know, whatever. I'd actually like to see him win it in a great match, because he's been on such a roll and he's put on such fantastic matches. I mean, do you think they would give it to him, or maybe, you know, give it to Rusev? What's your initial read on Money in the Bank?
Well, we've got four men who qualified for Money in the Bank thus far. They are The Miz, Braun Strowman, Rusev, and Finn Balor. There are four left. I thought on Raw they said there's seven in the match, but I went to WWE.com today and writing this up, and they list eight for both the men and the women, so there are four left. You know, looking at what we have right now, not knowing if someone else who lost already is going to get a second chance, you know, Braun Strowman is a guy who, to me, this doesn't fit Braun Strowman's character to carry a briefcase around, to use it to kind of backdoor into a title win, because he is just so in your face, and he is so, you know, I'm going to come down there and kick your butt. I mean, you almost initially think Strowman is a favorite, but just based on the Money in the Bank booking, traditionally, I think that kind of takes him out of the running. Rusev getting the victory over Daniel Bryan on SmackDown is very interesting to me in a number of different ways. First, you have Daniel Bryan losing for the first time upon his return to Rusev, who really has not been booked all that well lately. So what direction does WWE go there? Is this the beginning of the build of Rusev to build him up to where his level in WWE finally meets the crowd reaction of him, where he could possibly win Money in the Bank? Or is this more about the story of Daniel Bryan losing here as a result of Big Cass's post-match attack of him at Backlash? And if that's the story, you know, Rusev is almost by happenstance the winner. And it's not about Rusev winning and advancing. It's more about telling the story of Daniel Bryan and the effects of Big Cass's attack on him. So, you know, that's something that will be revealed going forward. I would expect with Bryan out of the Money in the Bank picture to rematch Big Cass at Money in the Bank if he does not find his way into the match somehow yet again. We're going to take a break, though, and we'll get Zach's comments about that and follow up from Frank if necessary here on PWTorchLivecast.com, Wrestling Night in America. Stay tuned.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit, and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
Back here on Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchLivecast.com, I'm Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, joined by PWTorch.com contributor Zach Haydorn, and we're answering Frank's question about Money in the Bank favorite and whether or not it is The Miz. Zach, looking at who's entered, and maybe if you have a dark horse, someone who hasn't been entered yet, is it The Miz? Is it The Miz's briefcase to win, or do you think it's someone else's?
Based on the four people that are already qualified for this match, I think, and Frank, you won't like this answer, but I think Miz, out of these four guys right now today, makes the most sense. He absolutely is on fire. I think he's performing at a level right now that he hasn't touched before. It's really resonating with fans. His character is over, and he, in the WWE, can... It's not a long list of people in WWE that can draw and get some real nice heel heat, and he is one of those guys. I look at a Money in the Bank win for him as feeding that momentum. I really think – I don't think Money in the Bank is a setback for him. I think it's a way to get him another gimmick that he can keep over. He really did well with that IC title on his shoulder and walking around like a heel, bragging about it. And he can do the same thing with Money in the Bank and eventually become – WWE champion, which I do see in his future. Outside of him and the four guys here, I'm sure we'll be talking about Roman Reigns, but I have a sneaking suspicion that he might be backdoored into this match with a win over Jinder Mahal somehow, where you have Kurt Angle set up a match between Jinder and Roman to you know, with the winner wrestling in that match. Now, I don't love it, but I don't know. Just the way they planted those seeds, and I look at the roster on Raw and think, okay, well, who can join this match if it's not, you know, Seth Rollins, for example, and Roman Reigns is fixed out in my head. And if he's in that match, for better or for worse, you got to look at him to win the title or to win the briefcase. And I'm going to take it one step further and say that if Vince is listening to the audience and he's just the impassioned response that Roman is getting since WrestleMania 34 in particular, something like a scenario in which Roman cashes in on a newly crowned Seth Rollins as champion or something to really get him a ton of heat as a heel, that briefcase could be an avenue to a heel turn if they ever decide to ignite that this year.
Frank, I think I already know the answer to this question, but who would you rather have win the Money in the Bank briefcase, The Miz or Roman Reigns?
Well, let me – I was trying to avoid – it was my goal tonight not to bring up the R word. It was my goal, and I succeeded. You guys did it, so it's all your fault.
I know. I baited you. I baited the whole thing.
It's all your fault, Zach. Well, you know what's funny?
I know. I'm never going to be invited on again.
this is going to be a Roman Reigns free show, darn it.
I said I'm not going to bring up the R word. But it's funny, as you were talking about Reigns winning the briefcase, I was thinking the same thing, but I was thinking the opposite. Wouldn't it be Vince McMahon to think, well, anybody who cashes in a briefcase gets a positive response? So if Roman Reigns has the briefcase and they hit his music, the crowd's going to cheer, and that's how he gets Roman Reigns over. Could you see a scenario like that?
I could see him thinking that. I don't think it'll work.
Right.
No, it
agree.
Won't work. It won't work. But this is how this man, it's been a 4-year obsession to get this guy over. I mean, it's just, and he doesn't give up. I mean, I don't know what to say anymore. I just don't, you know, that's why I avoided bringing it up, because I just don't know what to say, you know, but, I could see him thinking like that. I'm glad we had a good laugh about it though. You know, that's, I'm glad we had a good laugh.
Unfortunately, in a month and a half time, we might not be laughing. That's the downside.
Yeah, right.
I know.
Yeah.
Hey guys, listen, I want to wish those in your life a happy Mother's Day, both of you. And I appreciate, you know, you guys getting back to me on Twitter from time to time. It's really cool, you guys. And it's always a pleasure to talk to both of you.
Well, thanks for the call, Frank. And
you too,
certainly
Frank.
Appreciate your questions and comments on Twitter. Enjoy interacting with everyone on Twitter. I'm on Twitter at Greg M. Parks, and Zach is at Z Haydorn. So make sure, if you don't give us a follow, or if you're not following us now, that you do give us a follow, and ask us any questions. Even if you are a listener of Wrestling Night in America and you're not able to listen live, maybe you got a question that you want us to discuss, throw it us out there on Twitter. We'd love to hear from you, the listener. So, Zach, before we move on, I did want to talk a little bit about Backlash. Thoughts on the show from you, just an overall overarching thought, I guess. I know that it was almost unanimous, not quite unanimous, but almost unanimous thumbs down, or at least thumbs in the middle, for the Backlash post show that I hosted here last week. But just your thoughts on the show?
Yeah, thumbs down for me too. I really thought that it was just most of the show just did not make sense for me on a lot of levels. You know, I don't. If you're trying to get Roman Reigns over as this babyface, you're going to have him win the match the way he did. You know, putting that match on last is just befuddling to me. I don't get it. The whole thing, it just dragged on. It was just like it was stuck in the mud ever since the moment that Seth pinned The Miz. It really just halted. It just came to a screeching halt as far as the momentum of the show go. But I look at it in its entirety, and I look at the wrestlers and the acts that were featured on the show. And outside of Miz and Rollins, I don't think anybody got better because of what they did on that show, whether it was Big Cash or Daniel Bryan, Samoa Joe, Roman Reigns, Charlotte, Carmella, even somebody like Braun Strowman and Bobby Lashley. I don't think their matches on that show took them to a higher level or a better level or even told their stories well. So I think it missed on virtually all counts, and I was just very disappointed with it late on Sunday last week.
Yeah, I think that was the general sentiment by a good portion of the fan base that took time out to watch Backlash. We've already talked a little bit about Money in the Bank. June 17th is going to be that show. So don't forget that Wrestling Night in America is on the air every Sunday night. Most weeks we are on at 8 p.m. Eastern. We go for about 90 minutes. However, on WWE pay-per-view evenings, we go on the air right after the show talking about that particular event. So the next time we'll be going on the air a little bit after 11 o'clock, anticipated on June 17th. 2018, after Money in the Bank, we'll be taking your phone calls and thoughts on the show. Money in the Bank, we've talked about the men. We have two women who have qualified so far, Charlotte and Ember Moon. There are six left. Looking at Raw this past week, we got some interesting things going on. Lashley's promo has been talked about a lot. Mojo Rawley's performance in the IC title match, he did well there. And burgeoning Reigns-Mahal feud. This week, Raw emanates from the O2 Arena in London, England. We have announced for the IC title Seth Rollins and Kevin Owens. So that's going to be an interesting matchup there. But, Zach, I want to get your thoughts on a possible Reigns-Mahal feud that was teased on Raw. Is this just another way to try and get Reigns over as a babyface, pitting him against someone who is virtually uncheerable in Jinder Mahal? And do you see this as a big step down the card for Reigns here? Like, what's your take on this?
I mean, man, I do see this as a bit of a step down the card for Reigns, given where Mahal has been since he's lost the WWE Championship. But it's also going to be maddening for fans, because I just don't think it's going to have the effect that Vince and the WWE wants it to have. I mean, you heard the reaction on Monday night when Jinder cost Roman Reigns his qualifier match for Money in the Bank. I mean, those people cheered Mahal as he interfered and stopped Reigns from winning. I mean, if that's not a telltale sign for where Roman Reigns is at today, I don't know what is. I mean, Mahal is just a beaten down gimmick at this point, and he is getting cheered over Roman Reigns, a guy who's been in the main event of WrestleMania just a little over a month ago. I don't think it's going to have the effect that the WWE wants it to have. I think it's just going to be more of the same, and I think people are going to be very turned off by the whole thing, especially given the fact that Money in the Bank, which is presumably where this match may occur, is happening in Chicago. I mean, those fans, they, I don't think they'll stand for it at all. So I think they're in for a tough road with this one, and I don't think it ends well for either party.
Lashley's promo. I think I heard you kind of giggle a little bit when I mentioned that going over what happened on Raw this week. What do you make of that? I mean, was it just WWE's attempt to humanize Lashley a little bit, who has come off as robotic in his WWE run this far? Or is there a method to this madness that we're not seeing yet?
if there's a method to this madness, I certainly can't figure it out. I was very on my Raw report, the Alternative Perspective report this week at PWTorch.com. I was all over this segment because I didn't think Lashley came off well within it. I thought he was, like you said, very robotic. It was almost as if he had his script right in front of him that he was reading. It didn't feel like a back and forth interview like someone would do before an NFL game. It felt like here WWE wants to present this situation and they're going to just give Lashley some lines to read within it. I didn't think it felt very authentic. And I don't think Lashley was very genuine within it. And then you layer on top of that, just the kind of the weird creepiness with his sisters. And I just got a bad, uncomfortable vibe throughout the whole thing. When it was over, I was just kind of like, okay, I can appreciate them trying something new. And I can appreciate the fact that they want to give Lashley a pedestal to tell the world who he is. But I don't think that story lies within his relationship with his sister and his mom. I think it lies in the fact that he's a competitor. He's a former MMA fighter. He's a former champion outside of WWE. And in WWE, I think that's the story. And I think they missed the boat on that by yes, trying to humanize him. But I'm not sure that that's the kind of thing that's going to get Lashley over. I mean, he is a monster. He's a powerhouse. That's the guy that I think is going to make people want to buy tickets to see him. And I don't think they didn't get anywhere close to that within that interview segment. And I thought they made it worse with the awkwardness of the words that they actually scripted in to say. So as I said in my report, I thought it was a miss on all accounts. Again, I can appreciate the attempt and maybe they'll get better with that attempt in the weeks moving forward. But at this point, that was a fail.
And I think you hit the nail on the head. There is so much in Lashley's background to exploit for his character, like the military background,
right.
You know, his first WWE run, you could tailor that into his character. His MMA background, there's so much to mine there to bring out a character in him. And so far, it's a flop of what we saw on Monday night. So hopefully, you know, we'll by the end of it, we'll see that this all made sense. But I don't think WWE's earned that trust yet. So will... Yeah, we'll take a short break here and be back with more of your phone calls here on Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchLivecast.com.
When you want to know when the next episode of the PW Torch Livecast is scheduled or catch up on a show you missed, check out our homepage, PWTorchLivecast.com. You can stream the latest shows right from that page or download the show or get a link to subscribe on a podcast app. That's PWTorchLivecast.com for the latest shows and also catch up on shows you missed at PWTorchLivecast.com.
We go back to the phones here on Wrestling Night in America to the 814 area code. 814, I'm assuming this is Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland. Ryan, is that you?
It is.
Excellent. Ryan, what have you got for us tonight?
My first question for you is I went to a show in Parkersburg, West Virginia. And the Powers of Pain won the tag team titles at this show. So are they the only team from the 1980s to hold a indie tag team title in the United States?
I was going to ask you when you went to this show. Was it 1991? But by the sounds of it, it was more recent. I guess that's probably a very good. A very good guess. You know, I think the Rock and Roll Express still does their thing on the indies, but I don't know that they're champions anywhere. So I guess the better question would be what tag team in the 80s are still active on the indies? Certainly the Rock and Roll Express. I don't know if there's a version of the Midnight Express that's still kicking around out there somewhere. But yeah, Powers of Pain, it's hard to believe. Like if you'd have told me, you know, 15 or 20 years ago that the Powers of Pain, the Barbarian and Warlord, looking like they did in the early 90s, would not only still be around, but still be around in wrestling in 2018, I probably wouldn't have believed you. But, Zach, here we are. Do you know of any other tag teams offhand from the 80s still kicking around on the indies?
Outside of the ones you mentioned, no, and I certainly couldn't give you any names that are champions right now. So I was just as shocked as you were on that one. Wow. I didn't think they were still active, let alone champs. Good for them.
Certainly. Ryan, next question or point?
Okay, my next question is, there was a nice show last night. It was Kongo Kong from Impact Wrestling. He was supposed to wrestle in the main event. Have you heard any reason why he might have no-showed, or does he typically no-show events?
This is the first I've heard of it, so I haven't seen anything on Twitter that would indicate any kind of no-show or any reason for a no-show. He's certainly not a name that you attribute to frequent no-shows or anything like that. And I certainly haven't heard a reason given as to why he wasn't there, but I also haven't heard that it was a no-show.
Okay. And the other question I have for you about the show is Doink the Clown wrestled. So he was selling a lot of his merchandise, like T-shirts for $18 and dirty up pictures of Doink the Clown. So I was just wondering, is it possible that there's a Doink from WWF that's still wrestling on the independent circuit? Like, I just wondered how he gets away with selling all this merchandise.
Yeah, I know there were three or four guys who consistently played Doink in WWE. I don't know that any of them are actually active. The thing with that kind of character is you could put anyone under that mask and face paint and they can play Doink. It's not something to where you have to have a specific person play them. Now, the usage of the Doink character, I don't know if WWE just feels like they're above it and it's not worth going after for the trademarks. I don't know if maybe they let that lapse and now anyone is free to use the Doink character or what the deal is. But certainly there does seem to be quite a few Doinks running around on the indies.
Okay, and another question I have for you is on NXT. I told you I went to an NXT show, and what I noticed was they sometimes put, like, tweets of people in the audience, and one tweet that got out there was from an indie wrestler that said that he was there to see Adam Cole. He wasn't even on the show. So did they even review these tweets to say what they're saying?
I would think so, just to make sure that nothing untoward goes out on there. But I don't know how much they really do invest in it. I don't know if they just say, okay, here's a tweet that has the correct hashtag and there's no cursing in it. Let's put it out there. That could be something as simple as they do. I don't think they probably go over it with a fine tooth comb or anything like that. There are more bigger pressing needs probably going on backstage at these shows. But I would say that they probably just check it for language and make sure it's G-rated, and that's about it.
Okay. Okay, thanks for taking my call tonight.
Yeah, sure, Ryan. Good to talk to you, as usual. 515-605-9345 is the number to call. Before we get on to our next caller, we'll talk a little bit about SmackDown this past week. Becky Lynch continued her losing ways, and of course, Daniel Bryan losing in the main event to Rusev. This coming week on SmackDown, the New Day versus the Bar, where the winner will enter one man from the team in the men's Money in the Bank match. We also have Carmella's Mellabration, her title celebration, which will take place again from the UK, and the debut of Andrade Cien Almas and Zelina Vega on SmackDown. So a loaded SmackDown show. It's rare that we are here on Sunday night and talk more about what SmackDown has advertised than Raw, but here we are. So, Zach, any predictions for New Day versus The Bar, with the winner gets to enter one man in the Money in the Bank ladder match?
I haven't thought about who I think would win that match. I think just knowing the story they've told the last 2 weeks with Xavier Woods and the dissension, not dissension, but the mini sidebar story that they've told with Sheamus and Cesaro, with Sheamus having lost to Woods and Cesaro beating him. I'm kind of leaning towards one of them entering the match to kind of further that story, with one of them being in Money in the Bank and one of them not being in it. So I'm going to lean to that team. And because Cesaro picked up a win on Tuesday, I'm gonna say that maybe Sheamus is the guy for this one, just to further that storyline a bit. Question for you though, Greg, did they announce who of the New Day is going to be in the match?
They did not. And the way I understood it was, no matter what two wrestlers of the New Day are in this match, if they win, any one of the three would be eligible to be put in the Money in the Bank match. So it could be Woods and Kingston wrestling Tuesday, but if they win, Big E could still possibly be in the Money in the Bank briefcase match. That's my understanding of it. It could be wrong, and who knows? It could change by the time Tuesday rolls around, but that is how I understood it. I think Cesaro would be a really good choice for this match. I think Big E would also be a really good choice. I think we've seen most of what Kofi Kingston can do in these types of matches. I don't think putting him in this match would necessarily feel very fresh or anything like that. So Cesaro, Big E would be my top two personal preferences as to who I would see in this ladder match, with Sheamus a close third.
Yeah, and I think the fact that this match is happening at all is kind of it's a fun deal for me anyway, because I think there is singles potential on both of these teams, and we know now that one guy from one of them is going to be able to shine, and I'd like to think that there's going to be some sort of story told there within the team, whether it is Sheamus or whether it is Cesaro or whether it is somebody like Xavier Woods or Big E. You know, one of those guys getting single success, there's a story there on a silver platter, and I hope that WWE takes that and runs with it for a while as a lead up to the Money in the Bank ladder match on June 17th. I think it could be a really cool story to explore on SmackDown.
We talked a little bit about Rusev earning his way into the Money in the Bank ladder match by virtue of defeating Daniel Bryan in the main event of SmackDown last week. Zach, what does this mean for Daniel Bryan? I kind of posited the idea that, you know, this was more about Daniel Bryan feeling the effects of, you know, the post-match attack from Backlash against Big Cass, and maybe the lead to a Bryan-Cass rematch at Money in the Bank, more so than a real big push for Rusev. Do you see it the other way? I mean, is this the first step in really matching up Rusev's booking with the reactions he's been getting? Or is it more about Daniel Bryan?
No, it's more about Daniel Bryan. I agree with you on that note. Just the way that the finish went down, and yes, Daniel did put Rusev over clean there, but the announcing was pretty heavy on the fact that, you know, Daniel Bryan just couldn't take any more beatings because of the injuries to his ribs. And then the post-match angle with the camera shot just lingering on Bryan for as long as it did tells me that's where the story is within all this. I think, you know, beating Daniel Bryan, as much of a rub as it is for Rusev, it's almost like kind of like a backhanded compliment. It's like, okay, here, you're over. You want to win? Well, here, we're going to put you over Daniel Bryan, which is the one guy that you probably won't ever get more over than. So, you know, good luck with that. But
this also, you know, Zach, this also wasn't Rusev beating Shelton Benjamin to earn his way into Money in the Bank briefcase. It must say something that they had him beat Daniel Bryan for it.
Yeah, I think so. I think I don't know though, Greg. I just, the way that it was, the way that the end of that match happened, I myself, when I was watching it, just thought about Daniel Bryan. Where are they going with Daniel Bryan? What are they doing with Daniel Bryan? What story are they going to tell there? Is it more with Big Cass? You know, are they going to give him a storyline where he kind of goes to this dark place because he's started a losing streak or whatever the case is there? I just found myself not really thinking about Rusev afterwards. So yes, it's a big win for sure. I certainly wouldn't take that away from him. And like you said, it's better than qualifying with a match against the likes of a Shelton Benjamin. But to my eye, the attention was on Bryan, even in losing.
Fair enough. We will take a break here on Wrestling Night in America, And we've got some more phone calls on deck, so we'll get to those as well. So stay tuned here on PWTorchLivecast.com.
Rich Van, formerly of the Primetime Friday Livecast with Bruce Mitchell here. I want to tell you about my new show, The Deep Dive with Rich Van. On Saturdays at 6 p.m. Eastern weekly, join us as we dive into a single subject, some weeks as serious as race, gender, and stereotyping in wrestling, to as fun as which IC champs could fit into another era, and anything in between. We'll have guests from inside and outside the Torch family to cover the subject of the week, and of course your calls and emails. Prior to each episode, I'll put out on social media the subject and some notes, places where you can also bone up on the subject of the week if you're so inclined. I'll also devote shows to two of my favorite international promotions, New Japan Pro Wrestling and Progress. All are welcome. No secret handshakes here because Saturday nights on the livecast are officially all right for diving.
And if you didn't check out the deep dive this past Saturday night with Rich Fan, Bruce Mitchell was one of his guests on the show along with Cameron Hawkins. And they had a really nice show talking Infinity War and things of that nature. So be sure to check out PWTorchLivecast.com. Deep dive with Rich Fan every Saturday night on PWTorchLivecast.com. Greg Parks, Zach Haydorn here with you on Wrestling Night in America for May 13th, 2018. And we go back to the phones, the 615 area code. 615, is this Kenny?
Yes, it is, Greg and Zach. And before I get started, I want to wish everybody a happy Mother's Day to everybody that has a mother, including myself.
Of course. Happy Mother's Day indeed, Kenny. What are your thoughts for us tonight?
Well, I want to kind of switch up a little bit and actually talk about Impact a little bit. This is an interesting show this week. They kind of was building around Sami Callihan and Eddie Edwards feud, and in a way we kind of added Don Callis into the mix. You know, they showed the footage of him beating up Don Callis and essentially kind of now shortening the illusion or eliminating the illusion that Don Callis is now pretty much in charge with Impact Wrestling, or that he's one of the bookers. And I forget the other guy's name that's also in charge. Man, I forgot he was the leader in
Scott DeMore.
Scott DeMore, man, thank you so much for that. You know, it's
That's
really interesting
here.
That, well, yeah, I appreciate it. but this rivalry, man, I tell you, it's really, in my opinion, quickly becoming rivalry of the year, Greg. I mean, it's really been a standout rivalry. I actually got to watch their match on pay-per-view and just was blown away by the intensity of it. And to me, it just seems like it's going to get to the point where, you know, Impact alone is not going to be big enough to hold those two together. And, you know, considering what you were talking about earlier, you know, the possibilities of the Cody Rhodes and the Bullet Club and holding the event in Chicago, don't you think that that would be potentially a good undercard for that match? Do you think it is possible that they could have Sami Callihan and Eddie Edwards in sort of like a Chicago street fight or, you know, a no DQ or a lights out match? Do you think that that would be a possibility to really kind of get people excited about that card?
You know, I think it certainly could. I think if you're Impact, though, you really want, you know, you spent so much television time building up Edwards versus Callihan that you want their big matches on your stage rather than doing it at All In, which really is at this point a competitor to Impact Wrestling. You know, they've got slated for this week Edwards versus Sami Callihan in a street fight. I don't know how that's going to end. I haven't looked ahead to the spoilers to see, you know, what comes out of that. So first we have to get past that. And we know that it was Eddie Edwards who wanted Sami Callihan to stay a part of the Impact roster. They had much of Impact this past week was focused on the Impact management deciding what to do with the Sami Callihan character, with him having attacked Don Callis and bloodied him at a previous event. You know, that was the focus of Impact this week, and we know Eddie Edwards barged in and basically demanded that Callihan stay on the roster so that he could get his revenge. I agree, though. I like what they did at pay-per-view with Edwards accidentally hitting his wife. You know, things have gotten intense. I think it was well-timed. I didn't think it came off as too hokey, which sometimes those angles tend to do. And I've been on the Sami Callihan bandwagon for a while now, as far as his performance in Impact Wrestling. So I totally agree with you, Kenny, as to how hot this feud has gotten. The one thing I'll send to you, Zach, is, and you can certainly comment on Edwards versus Callihan as well. Don Callis, when he first came aboard, he, in one of his conference calls, I believe, made mention of how he wasn't really interested in becoming a character on Impact Wrestling. And I know everybody says that when they take over and they're put in charge. No, I'm going to stay behind the camera. You're not even going to know who I, you know, that sort of thing. And it was almost record time to when Callis not only became an announcer, which is one thing, but then, you know, the attack on Callis was, you know, the impetus for this Edwards Callahan storyline to take the next step. I mean, what's your take on Callis now becoming a character? We don't know if this is going to be something permanent, where he's going to be an actual on-air authority figure, or if this was just a one-off. You know, what's your take on what we saw on Thursday night, Zach?
I hope that because this feud, like you guys talked about, is so hot, and it is one of the really, you know, standout segments of these Impact shows. And because of the amount of heat that it has, I'm not too upset with the fact that Callis is involved. I think his involvement in it gives it kind of an added level of credibility and an added level of intensity to me. That makes it a little more real. And so I like that element of it, and I think it enhances this particular feud right now. I will definitely change my tune on it if in 10 months from now he's still embroiled in the feud of the day. But for right now, I think it worked. I enjoyed the segment this past week. So I want to see where it goes. And I know, yeah, he said that he wasn't going to be on TV, but certain times call for certain situations. And in this one, I'm okay with what they're doing so far.
Kenny, back to you. Another question or follow-up?
You know, I think you kind of summed it up right there, Zach, on that point. You know, we'll just have to see where they go with Don Callis. You know, I think it's interesting when I'm watching Impact this week, you know, the fact that they kind of went, you know, more outside of the Impact zone and started, you know, doing more of these matches or showcasing them in different promotions they have an alliance with, like Border City Wrestling and so forth. It kind of reminds me a lot of Wrestling Spotlight, you know, or even better, a show from the 80s with Gordon Solie and Joe Pedicino Pro Wrestling This Week. And to me, it's kind of like the format of Impact. You know, if they continue building on these relationships, could eventually evolve into more of a show on that vein if they decide, you know, Universal is too expensive, we need to try something different as sort of a cost-cutting measure, to kind of go more into that route, you know, although the green screen or whatever you can say Josh Matthews was in may get a little bit hokey at times, but I kind of like the Impact show this week. I thought they did kind of a good job with that. Another thing I want to talk about is kind of switch over to New Japan a little bit. And the reason I'm bringing up New Japan is particularly the IWGP champion, Kushida Okada. I hope I got his first name right. But he and Kenny Omega are set to have their fourth match, you know, the one that decided all, 2 out of 3 falls. And funny because Okada has been IWGP champion now for almost 2 years. You know, if he makes it next month, it will literally be 2 full years as basically the world heavyweight champion in New Japan. And it's kind of funny because, you know, I mentioned that in social media and with a few Facebook groups, and a lot of people, you know, complain about Brock Lesnar and all how, you know, he's just champion despite, you know, CM Punk and all that. And, you know, the fact that he had 434-day reign and all that stuff. But I'm kind of different in the sense that, you know, even though Lesnar doesn't hardly ever wrestle on a regular basis, the fact that he's been champion for over a year in WWE really does say a lot, if anything else, to the patience of Vince McMahon, you know, good or bad. You know, he's very patient with Lesnar as the Universal Champion. And obviously he likes him as champion. He likes AJ Styles as the WWE champion. He's been the champion since November. But still, what Okada's been able to do, you know, considering he's the longest reigning champion
you know, IWGP champion in New Japan history says really a lot about the history of the title. We go back its history, back with Inoki winning in 31 years ago. That really does say a lot. And is this in a way unprecedented in what we're seeing now, that, or in the sense that I'm kind of glad we're going back to having the champion actually holding on to the title instead of just having, like we had 20 years ago with the Monday Night Wars, where, you know, we're having a hot potato everything just for the sake of hot potatoing for TV ratings.
Yeah, you know, I think Okada, and I'll just use his last name to prevent any kind of mispronunciation of his first name. You know, I think this really is unprecedented. Not unprecedented, but I don't think we'll see something like this in the future, where he's holding the title for almost 2 years, especially at a company the level of New Japan. I just think creatively, it's too easy to fall into a rut. It's too easy to get stale with the same guy on top for as long as they have been. And, you know, New Japan becomes more and more successful. They'll end up running more and more shows. They may run more shows in America. You know, that's going to have an effect on who their champion is. Certainly, I mean, all the plaudits to Okada, you know, for being in this position for, and again, at a company the level of New Japan, which is basically the number two company in the world of professional wrestling, to have someone be your standard bearer for 2+ years is, you know, that's a huge compliment to Okada. But, you know, if you're going to ask me, are we going to see this again in the near future? I just don't think it happens. I you know, Lesnar certainly has held on to it for a long time in WWE. That's a special circumstance that I don't think is repeatable. And if you put it on someone who is there full time, I don't think they hold it that long either. I think it's easier to have someone like Lesnar hold it for as long as they have when they're on TV sporadically, versus, you know, someone who's on TV every week and is the champion. I think that's more difficult. So, you know, Zach, over to you. You know, what's your take on Okada's title length, and are we going to ever see something like that again?
No, I agree with you completely on that. I think his run is one for the record books and one for the history books. I don't think runs like the one he's currently in grow on trees. They're not there for everyone to take. And a lot of times these long championship runs, I mean, anybody can hold the belt for a long period of time. It's what you do with the belt during that time that really makes the run what it is. And Okada has been beyond impressive with what he's done as champion. I mean, he's faced all comers, and not only has he wrestled him, but he's had top-notch, high-level, high-quality matches with the likes of Kenny Omega, Cody Rhodes, Tanahashi, I mean, and everybody in between. So I think I look at the run in terms of length, but I also look at it as, you know, who he's faced, and he's faced them all, and it's been incredible. So I don't think something like that is easily replicated. Even like a Brock Lesnar, I mean, he's been the champion for a year, but he hasn't had nearly the amount of you know, drop dead awesome matches like Okada has.
Yeah.
So he's on a level to his own right now.
And to add on to that, Zach, not only match quality and what he's done to elevate the title because of that, I mean, he's been on top as New Japan's business has grown to levels not seen in a long time, if ever. You know, and he's got to get a lot of credit for that. You know, we're at an era where, you know, being the champion today doesn't mean what it did 30, 40 years ago, where if you were the champion, you got all the credit or all the success for how healthy and how stable the company you were champion for was. You know, that's not the same today. With WWE and it being so brand-centric and not wrestler-centric, it's hard to really credit or take away from a guy's title reign based on business. Whereas New Japan, it's still more about the wrestlers. And to see New Japan growing and continuing to grow, I mean, they haven't plateaued, even though Okada is, you know, almost 2 years into his run. You would think at some point business would kind of level off, but they continue to be really healthy financially, which says a lot about Okada.
Yeah, that's a really good point, and I totally agree. I mean, you look at, you know, when New Japan really started to get momentum and get the confidence and get the notoriety to enter other markets, like the United States, like they did last year, and it coincides with Okada as champion and some of the big matches that he had, in particular the Tanahashi matches at Wrestle Kingdom, and especially that Kenny Omega match a couple of years ago at Wrestle Kingdom. Like, that took that company to another level, and Okada is the common denominator in all of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Back to Kenny. Kenny, do you have a final question or comment for us?
Yes, I do. And it's funny, you know, you were mentioning, we're talking about the long title reigns. You know, I think about a little bit about the NWA in the sense that, you know, I know we haven't really heard a whole lot about the NWA since Billy Corgan took over, other than Nick Aldis is currently the NWA champion. But I know one of the things that they had purchased when they purchased the NWA was, you know, the Houston Wrestling Library. And I know that prior to that, that WWE was sort of in talks to maybe sublicense some of that property. And, you know, I'm actually watching a documentary right now on Houston Wrestling, The Life and Times of Paul Bosch, the legendary promoter of it. You know, largely I was inspired of watching it because of Bruce Pritchard, of course, because, you know, I've been a big fan of his podcast, and he talks a lot of good things about Houston Wrestling. And considering that WWE has been gradually adding more and more classic content, whether it's WCW programming or even their own programming now with Heat, do you think it would be in their benefit to maybe go to the NWA, go to Billy Corgan, and kind of come to an arrangement where, you know, they would sublicense this footage? Because, I mean, that Houston library, and I've seen bits and pieces of it, it looks really good. And I think it would be a plus for that WWE network to continue to build on adding more and more classic content as a way of trying to keep on selling the network while at the same time, you know, finding that perfect balance with some on-demand and new content as well that, you know, they try to appeal with. You know, like for every time you have a camp WWE or story time, you know, you could have a classic 2 out of 3 falls match between Johnny Valentine and Wahoo McDaniel or something along that line. Just sort of maybe sense of balancing out. And I'll let you guys finish it up from here. And thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for calling in, Kenny. The Houston Library is one of the ones, one of the really last big ones that WWE doesn't own. I think Memphis is another one, although I know there's some ownership rights issues there with Memphis and things of that nature. So certainly, you know, if WWE really wanted the library, they would have bought it before Billy Corgan and the NWA purchased it for their use, whatever that may be going forward. So, I don't think trying to get it through Corgan is necessarily going to work. I also think, you know, we're in a different time now where WWE is looking at what people watch on the WWE network. And while it is good to have as many libraries as possible on there and all that, it's not really a heavily trafficked part of the WWE network. You know, you look at the top 20, top 10 most watched WWE Network shows of the week. A lot of it is their original content. A lot of it is the pay-per-views, the pre-shows, NXT, things of that nature. So I'm wondering if maybe that they don't value those other libraries that are still out there as highly now that they have numbers with the WWE Network that tells them, you know, that maybe this isn't as valuable as maybe they once thought. But you know, anything could happen, but I don't think they would be interested right now in going through Billy Corgan to get that footage. We're going to be back with more phone calls, and we'll talk NXT from this week right after this on Wrestling Night in America.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
Wrestling Night in America rolls on here on PWTorchLivecast.com. Greg Park, Zach Haydorn with you. I want to touch on NXT from this past week. We saw an interview segment with Ricochet and Velveteen Dream start things off. Looks like a feud is headed in that direction. EC3 defeated Raul Mendoza. Dakota Kai defeated Vanessa Bourne and then was continued to be tormented by Shayna Baszler. The War Raiders defeated Heavy Machinery, and Tommaso Ciampa beat Cassius Ohno next week. Oney Lorcan, Danny Burch, and Pete Dunne against the Undisputed Era in six-man tag action, and that's a match that I don't think anyone would complain if that took the whole hour on NXT. Unlikely to happen, but certainly it's got some possibilities. Zach, I want to ask you about that Ricochet Velveteen Dream opening segment. Ricochet, the one thing that had been holding him back in certain aspects was his promo. I thought he did really well on this promo. Velveteen Dream, I thought, did well as usual. But it really struck me how far Ricochet has come in that regard.
He totally has. And I always thought that was going to be a place where NXT would serve him well and giving him an opportunity to grow on a microphone and enhance his promo to inevitably enhance his character to go along with what he does in the ring that's so tremendous. But I love the opening segment too, and not just because of Ricochet, but because of Velveteen Dream as well. I thought they both had a really unique chemistry with each other. They played off each other well, and they both together seem to bring out the best in the other one. So I'm excited to see where they go with this. Now, presumably, I would assume it's leading to a match of some kind, and I'm excited for it. I think it's the right feud and the right program for each of them right now. So I think they did well in booking it the way they are.
And Dream Ricochet feels like a takeover match to me. I don't feel
right,
like that's
exactly
a match you give away on TV, but we'll see what direction they head there. Kenny led us into discussing Impact a little bit. The focus this past week was, again, Sami Callihan's attack on Don Callis. We saw DJZ and Andrew Everett defeat LAX, who was once again without Conan. Grado over Rohit Raju. Phantasma won a four-way to become the X Division number one contender. And Pentagon over Eli Drake in the main event to retain the title. Next week on Impact, Kira Hogan versus Tessa Blanchard. Sue Young has a funeral for Rosemary. Don't worry, she didn't die, but it's a thing she's doing. Okay. Edwards versus Sami Callihan in a street fight. Eli Drake and Scott Steiner versus the team of Z and E, DJZ and Andrew Everett for the tag titles. And Matt Sydal and Austin Aries against Phantasma and Pentagon. I want to ask you about Eli Drake, Zach. We saw Eli Drake lose, as I said, in the main event to Pentagon. He defends the tag titles with Scott Steiner. Steiner is obviously a short-term entry onto the Impact roster. What do you see as being next for Eli Drake? He was champion there for a while until they got Austin Aries, but it kind of feels like his time at the top of Impact is over. Am I wrong, or what do you think happens with him?
No, I think you're right. I don't think... He's one of those guys. I think Drake is a really unique guy, and then I think he can be plugged into a lot of situations, and he can make different things work. I think he's going to still be kind of a, I don't want to say workhorse, because that's a term that gets tossed around too much, but he's kind of just like a go-to guy for that brand. If they need him in a main event somewhere down the road, he has enough clout within the company and with the fans to deliver in that role. If he's got to drop down to the mid card to facilitate other feuds on top, I mean, I think he fits there too. So he's kind of a universal puzzle piece for that company that they can put in a lot of spots. I don't see him moving forward as a guy that's going to carry his brand. Like in 2-3 years, are we going to be talking about him on top of the company? No, but I think he stays in that upper mid card level and facilitates between main event and there as the company needs it. But presumably they're going to go in a different direction that doesn't leave him out, but other guys are going to have to be featured, and that the cycle of that company has to move on. And I don't think that Drake is a big part of that future from a being a focal point on the show standpoint.
We go to our final call of the evening. This is a Skype call with a 111 area code. Hello, please state your name, where you're calling from.
Hi, Greg. Hi, Zach. This is Greg from Toledo.
Greg from Toledo.
Hey,
how
Greg.
Are you this evening?
I'm swell. How about you?
Doing well. What have you got for us tonight?
It's so fun listening to you guys live because you bring up new topics as the night goes on. And I'm like, I already have my three topics, but I'm now like, I got like 18 topics. I will kind of simmer down, try to get it down.
Try to pare it down to three for us if you could. I know it's probably very difficult.
Well, let me ask you, Greg. Would you rather have an indie-centric or WWE-centric three topics? Because I have, like I said, 18 points.
You know, probably WWE. I feel like that's more in my wheelhouse.
All right.
So, and we haven't talked about WWE for a few minutes, so I guess we're due.
All right. Well, let me start out with my first one, which is a WWE / indie, kind of. I tuned in late. I tuned in a half hour late because the sun comes down like at a different time over here. Did you guys talk about the GWN on the three tables? The table for three.
Okay. Yeah, you're talking about the AJ Styles table for three, where there was, I think, an ad at the very end of it for a Styles versus, what was it, Styles versus Angle match?
There was a lot of footage during the show, and then at the end of the show they had the GWN promotion at the end of it.
Mm. We have not talked about that, believe it or not.
You
have associated with that, or did you just want to mention it?
Well, I wanted to, because this is the first time that, aside from like the Bruce Pritchard, things that should not be said on the WWE Network or whatever, they got mentioned. Like, we didn't think we'd see Impact on WWE Network, and now it is. Is there an avenue for?
Well, you know, I think obviously they've come to some sort of agreement with Impact to license their footage when necessary. And if you want to tell the complete story of AJ Styles or Samoa Joe, or even a guy like Kurt Angle, you know, Bobby Roode, they've got James Storm, they might have again sometime in the future. I think it behooves WWE to make a deal where they can license some of the footage in exchange for a plug for GWN or whatever the case may be. So, you know, I see this as a positive going forward that they're able to really tell a complete picture of a wrestler they have, at least on the WWE Network. Craig, are you there?
Yeah, I'm sorry. The Daniel Bryan Rusev ending.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Rusev has the short angle going, and Daniel Bryan has a long angle going. Like Daniel Bryan, they're trying to draw out till next WrestleMania, and Rusev, they're trying to draw out till Money in the Bank, and et cetera. And I thought that was a good ending.
Daniel Bryan, Rusev, we did talk about. We didn't talk about necessarily the length of what they're stretching out. Zach, you know, it would you know, WWE would love to have Daniel Bryan in some major capacity at WrestleMania next year. But the thing to remember is he's not signed yet past September. His contract runs out, and he hasn't agreed to re-sign. So, you know, if you're WWE, how do you look at that? You know, do you book him like you did on Tuesday where, yeah, Daniel Bryan hasn't re-signed, I'm going to use this opportunity to put a guy like Rusev over? Or do you book Daniel Bryan in a way where you try to convince him to re-sign with you?
Well, I think you walk a very fine line, because certainly WWE is not going to feature Bryan he's already featured as a top tier main event level guy, but I think it kind of is going to end there until he does sign a contract. I mean, and I don't think you can fault WWE for that. They're a business, and they're not going to put the business behind somebody who could leave the company in a few months. But they also have to walk the fine line with, I think they have to entice Daniel Bryan with what his future will look like in the company while protecting themselves against putting too much behind him before he resigns. I mean, you don't want to position him on the card, you know, just constantly jobbing to somebody like Rusev or really anybody, because that'll tell Daniel Bryan that, hey, okay, I'm back, I'm cleared, but WWE doesn't seem to have any plans to make me a featured guy for the company, so I'm going to go out there. Like, you don't want him thinking that if you're WWE. At the same token, like I mentioned, you can't go all in with him yet until he signs that contract. So it's a balancing act for them right now. And I think until that contract is signed, we're going to continue to kind of see a longer story play out with Bryan, because I don't think WWE will give him the full green light like fans want. Until his name is signed on that dotted line for him to invest in the future of that company. So more to come, and I think we get kind of the facetiousness of the push right now, and kind of the strange finish with the camera zooming in on Bryan's face, because they want it to be drawn out, because they have to, given his contract. But it's a fine line, and you can't fault them for attempting to walk it the right way.
Yeah. Craig, any follow-up on what Zach or I talked about, or your third and final question?
My third and final is the tag team Money in the Bank. The out for the New Day bar match is to have, I would say, Big E, but I think New Day has been hinting at Kofi going for the title. They in their promos, even offline, they say, we want Kofi to be the new big champion. And mm-hmm. But I would like Big E, but they keep saying Kofi. So, but they have an out because of the tag team Money in the Bank that they've been hinting at. And I was wondering, like, if there's not a tag team Money in the Bank, what would be the best route for them to go to? And I'll listen off air, and thank you guys for doing Wrestling Night in America.
Yeah, thank you for calling into Wrestling Night in America, Craig. Always a pleasure to hear from you, and you know, the topics that you bring up each week. Zach, the idea of a tag team Money in the Bank was kind of floated around earlier this week. I don't think anything was concrete from WWE's end was said yay or nay, but based on the match we'll be seeing on SmackDown, I think you can probably eliminate it unless there's some screwy finish that leads to them getting their own Money in the Bank match, which, to be perfectly honest, three Money in the Bank matches on one card, even as different as they're going to be, would be a bit of overkill. But, you know, what do you think about Kofi Kingston from New Day? I said he would be the least interesting, but I can see from a storyline point of view how Big E and Xavier Woods would look at Kofi as the one with seniority on the team, and that he would be the one to then, you know, get that opportunity. And I mean, what do you think about a tag team Money in the Bank ladder match? If not this year, then sometime in the future, is that a viable match to you?
Yeah. I think it's definitely a viable match at some point down the road, but this year, given the fact that there's already two on the show, I don't think that I would book that match for this year, because you saturate the ladder match. And by the time that third ladder match comes on in the night, I mean, you can only do so many things off that ladder or with that ladder in the midst of a show. And having three matches would really just water down just the whole concept of the ladder match in and of itself. So I think they really need to be careful with that, which is why I don't see it happening this year. And like you said, given the fact of what's booked for SmackDown this week between The Bar and The New Day, it doesn't look like that's on the horizon. But for future years, or maybe just a one-off at some point where they do a tag team ladder match with the winner, you know, getting a briefcase. Doesn't necessarily have to be at the Money in the Bank pay-per-view for them to do that. But it could be interesting, and they certainly have the talent on their tag team roster across both brands to make it happen. As far as Kofi Kingston goes, I'm with you. I mean, we've seen Kofi. We've kind of been there, done that with him in Money in the Bank ladder matches, and I think he's athletic enough to pull off some really cool spots in those matches. But from a storyline perspective, the guy that I would like to see in that spot, like Craig and you, is Big E. I mean, he, when you watch the New Day's act, he stands out to be in terms of being one of the more talented guys. All three are very talented, but he's just, in my eyes, a little bit above the others. And I think his ceiling's higher. He's a big guy. He's got a personality. He's charismatic. You're automatically drawn to him when he's on the screen. So I want to see what a singles run looks like for him. Like I said, we've been there with Kofi, and yes, he is the veteran, but you know, it's 2018. And I think if they're going to hit go on a Big E singles run, something like winning Money in the Bank or being in Money in the Bank is a good way to do that. And like I said earlier in the show, I think you have a ready-made story between the three of them as Big E takes off in his singles career. So, you know, Kofi it'd be fine, but that's kind of all it would be. I kind of just shrug my shoulders and be like, yeah, he'll do something cool in the match. But I think the long-term investment from New Day is Big E. And, he's as hot as he's going to get, so why not run with him right now?
Well, Zach, thank you again for joining us on Wrestling Night in America this evening. Always fun to have you as the co-host when I do the show. I'll give you a moment to plug your latest work for PWTorch.com.
Oh, thanks, Greg. Thank you very much for having me. I always love being on the show and chatting with you, and hope we can do it again soon. As far as PWTorch.com goes, you can check out my Monday Night Raw Alternative Perspective report on the site live right when Raw kicks off. It's opposite Wade Keller's report. We each watch the show and give our opinions on it live as these segments happen. You can also check out my 205 Live report, which goes up after 205 Live, about 30 minutes after the show airs on Tuesday nights. Full detailed live recap with analysis on the various segments that take place. And last but not least, every weekend my column Artistry of Wrestling drops. It'll drop here a few minutes after we get off the air. And it'll kind of, this week, the subject is Roman Reigns and how his push has affected the art and magic on Monday Night Raw. So that drops every weekend, and the new issue that will be out shortly after this show's in the can.
Great. Sounds good. Make sure you check out Zach's work on PWTorch.com and the work of all of our other contributors who not only contribute on the website, but also who contribute each week as my guest co-host here on Wrestling Night in America. And thank you for listening each week here on PWTorchLivecast.com. And if you are not yet a PWTorch VIP member, here's how you can go about joining.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I invite you to get even more of what the Torch offers by becoming a PW Torch VIP member. Not only do you get ad-free access to our website, the mobile site, and the desktop site, and access to about 30 years of our archives, including over 1,500 back issues and thousands upon thousands of hours of our audio shows going back to 2004, plus tons of retro radio shows from the 1990s, but you also get over 15 VIP exclusive podcasts per week, in addition to ad-free editions of these PW Torch livecasts throughout the week. So we take the ads out of the PW Torch livecast for VIP members and then give you over 15 other podcasts per week, including what started it all, the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show. I host that with Bruce every weekend, and we spend a couple hours talking about the biggest stories of professional wrestling and wrestling history. It's one of the longest-running weekly pro wrestling podcasts on any subject, and it's one of the main reasons people go VIP and stay VIP. Another is The Fix with Todd Martin. I host that every midweek with Todd, and we get Todd's expertise and opinions every midweek on current events in professional wrestling, not just WWE, but all promotions worldwide, including New Japan. Plus, we end every show with some expert MMA talk from the LA Times columnist and Sure Dog contributor, Todd Martin. And there's so much more. The every single day weight killer hotline with news updates every single day, Monday through Friday. And every Saturday and Sunday, I do the SE editor format of the weight killer hotline, where I answer VIP member questions in depth. And there's so much more. There's the Wayback Playback with Pat McNeil and Jim Valley, Wrestling Audio Community with Sean Radican, the WWE Future Pass Show with scouting reports on prospects and a look back at the indie career of current stars, the PW Torch East Coast Cast Extended VIP Edition, the retro radio shows. Every Thursday, a new retro radio show from the 90s drops, from the early 90s or the Attitude Era. And last but not least, my in-depth Raw and SmackDown reports. You can get a full chronological rundown of every episode of Raw and SmackDown with my analysis of the show in-depth every Monday night and Tuesday night. So check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. We give you a lot here at the livecast, but there is so much more. The vast majority of our work is for our VIP members, and you can become one today. Go check out details on a subscription at pwtorch.com/govip. This is life.